I am.
Oh, cool. All right. All right, I got my recorder going so I can hear how you sound. Tell me your name and title, please.
Ryan Popple, CEO of Proterra.
So there's a Proterra. What do you guys do? Tell me what your product is.
So our product is an electric vehicle for the mass transit industry. What we do is we're the first company in the world to build a purpose-built vehicle that incorporates EV into a transit bus. So we do a ground-up original design where we start out with a clean sheet of paper, and we've designed and engineered and now manufacture an electric vehicle that is optimized to serve in mass transit.
And is it completely 100% all electric?
It is completely 100% all electric. We even do air conditioning and heating with an electric system. We have electric power steering, and we've actually changed some of the door systems to be electrically actuated as well. So it is 100% zero emission in the local community. And on a greenhouse gas basis, depending on where you are in the country, it's anywhere from an 80 to a 90% reduction in well-to-wheel greenhouse gases.
Does that include the manufacturing process and the recharging process, the electricity used and the greenhouse gases generated in that process?
Yeah, it definitely includes the primary energy used to recharge the vehicle. I don't know that we've calculated the embedded energy in the manufacturing process, although our factory is a relatively light assembly operation. We put these vehicles together more like an airplane or a helicopter. So when I look at our energy build with our factory, this isn't a very energy-intensive product to build. It's more like building a computer on wheels.
Have you sold these buses elsewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. We started selling the vehicles in 2010. Today, I think we're deployed in a dozen cities in the U.S., and when I look at our order backlog, I think we'll be at 18 cities within a year. So we're deployed in Southern California, in L.A. County. We're in Stockton, California. We're in Texas, Florida, Tennessee, Kentucky, Massachusetts, South Carolina. And the factory floor right now has more vehicles for California. And then right behind those will be the first vehicles that we'll begin shipping to Seattle.
And as far as the bus, does it look like a bus? I mean, is there any way people could tell it's electric rather than being driven by a combustion engine?
Yeah, one of the decisions we made is rather than starting with a conventional bus and then trying to convert a steel rectangular bus into an electric vehicle, we really wanted to capture the concept that this is a high-performance product, that it's very different from a user experience from a traditional transit bus. In fact, a lot of times we refer to these as EV transit versus a bus. When you look at our vehicle, the first thing that you notice is it's more aerodynamic and sleek. It is not your traditional metal bread box with a truck engine in it trundling around as a city bus. It's more like a fuselage of an aircraft. When you walk up to the vehicle and you touch it, one of the things that's unique about it is you don't have the sheer metal angles because we don't build these vehicles out of steel or aluminum. We build them out of carbon fiber and composite. So all of the curves and the shapes, the aerodynamic coefficient of the vehicle, it's very different. So, you know, I would say these are the most beautiful transit vehicles that anyone's ever produced. They get a lot of attention, and a lot of the design elements highlight that smoothness, that efficiency.
And so when you talk about ground up from a fresh sheet of paper, that's what you're thinking, instead of being hemmed in by what a bus is today, trying to think about what a bus could be.
Yeah, that's right. There have been a lot of attempts, maybe a half dozen attempts to electrify transit buses. And I think just like the original attempts to electrify passenger vehicles started out with people essentially trying to find places to stick batteries into an existing vehicle, you end up proving that you can in fact build an electric vehicle, but you have the result is a pretty compromised design from a performance perspective. Since we started with a chassis that we designed from scratch, we could get two things right that are critical for good EV engineering. The first is that we could make sure this was the lightest possible vehicle on the road. So a lot of people hear about this vehicle and they assume, since we're carrying batteries on it, that it's heavier than a diesel or a natural gas bus. It's actually lighter than both. So we started out with a very lightweight composite platform, more like an aircraft frame. And then the second thing we were able to do, in addition to getting the weight out of the vehicle, is we were able to put all of the battery packs between the axles underneath the floor of the vehicle. So just like a Tesla Model S has incredible handling relative to its competition because of the batteries being low and close to the ground, the Proterra electric vehicle is the only electric transit vehicle that's really designed around that concept of keeping the batteries low and centered on the vehicle.
Yeah, I watched some of your videos and looked through your website to get some information before I did this interview. And that's one thing that kind of jumped out at me. It would seem that a big problem for cars is having enough battery space, but a bus is huge. I mean, you can put a lot of batteries on a bus.
You can. From a volume perspective, a transit vehicle is a much easier electric vehicle problem to solve than a light-duty vehicle. When I worked at Tesla, you know, I was amazed at how good the engineers were at the discipline of packaging, figuring out where that electric motor is going to go, where the batteries are going to go, while also having all of the room in a vehicle for 5 or 7 passengers. For us, especially if you spend the time and the money to start from a blank sheet of paper, you have a lot of real estate for the batteries. Unfortunately, though, if you start with the constraints of a metal vehicle that was designed to have a rear engine compartment and a drive line, you really don't have as much space as you should. That being said, while you've got plenty of room for volume, you do have to be careful about mass, because people are heavy and these vehicles are expected to carry 50 to 70 passengers. So if you don't do a good job at lightweighting the vehicle up front, by the time you put all the batteries on it, you don't have as much of a weight budget for your passengers. And so that's another thing we paid attention to. Our customers want to move as many people as possible with a single vehicle. And if your vehicle is too heavy starting out, you actually end up hitting your weight limit on the number of passengers you're legally allowed to carry.
It's kind of a push and pull sort of situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you've always got to be conscious of the metrics that really matter to your customers. You know, it's not necessarily the exact price per vehicle. They often think about cost per passenger mile.
And I want to get to the cost angle, but I want to ask a couple more questions just about the construction of the bus itself. As far as most people, when they think of electric vehicles, there's a big concern about how far the vehicle can go on each charge, and buses typically run all day. So do they need to return to charge? How do you solve the problem of the batteries running out?
So we have two strategies, or we have two technologies that we use, and we use them synergistically to be able to perform the job of a city bus. A city bus in the U.S. on average runs 130 miles a day, and they're out on the road, you know, in most cases 12 hours a day with some breaks, especially during midday when transit utilization drops a bit. So the two things that we pay a lot of attention to: number one, range per charge. So we now have configurations of the vehicle that can go 200 miles or more on a single charge. That's a great solution for a city's longest routes, or for a city that doesn't really have any ability to put in fast charge technology. Now, for all of our customers to date, they have all deployed at least one fast charger somewhere in their bus system. And what that allows them to do in most cases is charge a vehicle in under 10 minutes. In many cases, our customers are charging the vehicles in 3 to 4 minutes. So they use kind of a top-up model. They don't drain the battery all the way down. And right before they get to their next passenger pickup on their schedule, they'll hit the fast charger, add 3 to 4 minutes of power, and go on their way. And that's how we've been able to run vehicles 300 miles a day in some cases. And most importantly, it's the reason why we've been able to offer the product as a true replacement for fossil fuel powered transit. You know, traditionally, electric vehicles, they couldn't do this job. You know, the vehicles are very heavy. The routes are energy intensive. You've got a lot of hills and congestion. So up until a few years ago, it wasn't possible for an electric vehicle to do this. But now with long range and fast charge, you absolutely can replace conventional buses.
Without getting overly technical, can you explain what the batteries are? What type of battery is this and how they work?
Well, we use lithium-ion batteries, which are the same type of batteries that are in most consumer electronics devices, and they're in all modern EVs. So the EV industry went through a couple iterations of battery technology. I think they started out with lead acid, then they went to nickel metal hydride, and then Tesla Motors was really the first company to commercialize the use of lithium-ion batteries in a light-duty vehicle. So we use batteries from the light-duty vehicle family. Currently, we work with two of the largest battery suppliers in the world, Toshiba and LG Chem, and their batteries are different. They're slightly different technologies, and we will recommend either the Toshiba battery packs or the LG Chem battery packs, depending on the city, depending on the route structure. Importantly, though, we build the battery pack itself, so we buy the modules from Toshiba or LG Chem. We build the pack, we load the battery management software, and we can customize the number of battery packs per vehicle. So some customers need 4 battery packs in a vehicle, some need 6, some need 8.
And fewer battery packs would mean a cheaper bus if it didn't have to go as far in a daily shift?
That's right. Especially for college campus routes and bus routes where the total annual mileage looks more like 20 or 30,000 miles, I've seen our sales team specify shorter range vehicles for campus and corporate. For most of the city bus routes that we look at, though, we tend to recommend the full complement of batteries because those vehicles are driven 40 to 60,000 miles a year. So they really need very strong capability in terms of energy storage.
What type of lifespan do the buses and their batteries have? Do they last as long as a comparable city bus?
Yeah, I actually think our buses are more durable. Unfortunately, we're only 5 years into the deployment cycle of our oldest vehicle, which was our oldest vehicles, which were deployed in Southern California. But because we build the vehicles out of composite, composite doesn't rust and it doesn't fatigue the way steel and aluminum do. So, you know, I visit bus fleets throughout the country, and the average city bus in the United States is about 8 years old. The FTA certifies them for 12 years of usage, but once a vehicle is 9 or 10 years old, it's getting pretty long in the tooth, and you've got a lot of problems with rust, with corrosion, even with water leaks on traditional metal buses, especially those that are deployed in coastal areas like, you know, Santa Cruz, San Diego, Seattle. There's a lot of salt in the air. So steel and aluminum really aren't great technologies for a long-term vehicle application. So we like a lot of the properties of composite. Now, our vehicles have gone through the federal certification program at Altoona, Pennsylvania. So the FTA makes you go through a simulated 12-year test to be certified for sale in this market. We've gone through 3 versions of that test. We're on the second generation of our product. So we've run the test 3 times, once for our first generation product, once for mid-year update, and then recently for our second gen product. And the exciting thing is in this most recent test that we did, we actually set 4 all-time records in FTA testing. So we were the fastest accelerating bus. We had the highest hill climb capability in terms of the grade of the hill that we could climb. We were the lightest bus that they had ever tested, and we were the most energy efficient bus they ever tested.
How much do they cost in comparison to a traditional bus?
Traditional bus that's purchased by a municipal customer like a Stockton or a Porterville would be in the neighborhood of $450,000. That's a diesel bus. Diesel buses, you can't deploy them in some of the air quality management districts in the state of California. So in many cases, those are already off the table because they're too dirty. The next step up in terms of cost is a CNG bus. Those vehicles are anywhere from $500,000 to $600,000. And then after that, you have your hybrids. Hybrids are anywhere from high fives to low sevens. And then our vehicles, we price them between the mid 600s and the low 800s. So it really depends on how many batteries they specify and what other bells and whistles they put on the vehicles. But, you know, right now, if you looked at the average project that we're working on, I think we're probably in the 700,000s, you know, somewhere between 725, 775. And then there are a couple projects we're doing where the customer specified, you know, every possible option on the vehicle, and those are just over 800. Importantly, we've taken $100,000 of cost out of these vehicles per year over the last 5 years. So when we started out, this technology was as expensive as hydrogen fuel cells. What's happened, though, is because the light-duty sector has really scaled EV technology, we can now buy batteries, electric motors, inverters, high-voltage systems for, you know, in some cases, 80% less than we were paying even a couple years ago. So we've pulled about $500,000 out of the cost of the vehicle to date and lowered the prices to the customers. And I think we've got another couple $100,000 ahead of us. So as we look forward over the next couple years, I think what you'll see is the first thing that'll happen is EVs will be cheaper than diesel hybrids in this market. Within probably a year after that, they'll be cheaper than CNG buses without, and you won't have any of the CNG infrastructure headache. And then the last shoe to drop is I think electric vehicles in transit are even going to be cheaper on an upfront cost basis than diesel. They're just a much simpler, lighter weight vehicle to build.
And in terms of over the life of the bus, does it, even with the higher price, does it end up being cheaper when you factor in the cost of fuel?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's why we've been awarded over 400 units to date. This has moved far beyond one-off demonstration projects for, you know, the environmental benefits alone. When we do a typical total cost of ownership analysis for our customers, the 40-foot electric vehicle we sell, including maintenance and energy over 12 years, can pencil out to be just around $1 million for your total life cycle cost. When you look at your standard diesel bus, that number can be as high as $1.4, $1.5 million. And hybrids can be even higher than that. So a lot of our customers are already logging and reporting those fuel savings, and it's adding up very, very quickly. Across the initial 60 vehicles that we've deployed in 12 cities, we're saving our customers 5,000 gallons of diesel fuel every week, and we're also saving them all of the disposable filters and fluids that you need to keep a diesel bus or CNG bus on the road.
And you mentioned the cost per passenger. Does that factor favorably against a conventional bus?
Yeah, absolutely. Because this is the lightest 40-foot bus on the road, you can carry more passengers from a weight limit perspective. Some of our customers will run their analysis based on cost per mile, and then others, especially larger cities, will run it on a cost per passenger mile. But in both cases, electric is already superior to diesel, CNG, and hybrid. So this industry, to me, feels like solar 5 years ago, where the total cost of ownership made sense, but now you're trying to solve the upfront capital cost challenge. What's going on in this industry, though, that is very exciting to me is that upfront premium is going down by about $100,000 every year. So this, you know, right now you make the sale based on the total cost of ownership and the lifetime savings. So these things are great investments. But I think in a couple years, it's just going to be a no-brainer because you're going to be roughly the same price as the fossil fuel vehicle. You won't have any of the pollution, any of the noise, any of the maintenance challenges. You'll have an 80% reduction in greenhouse gases. And you'll be running a vehicle at the equivalent of 22 miles per gallon versus 4 or 5.
Yeah, and Porterville is not a very large town, and so it can be, I imagine, challenging to make that pitch to small towns because an electric vehicle seems like something that a big city would do versus a place like Porterville.
You know, that's one of the nice things about buses as a major tool in our country's transit systems. We tend to pay a lot of attention to rail, and rail, you know, those are the big headline multi-billion-dollar projects. But really the workhorse of moving people around, especially people who can't necessarily afford, you know, two cars per household or a kid going to community college, and even the kids going to school on school buses. Buses really are the workhorses. So they're in small towns, medium-sized cities, And large cities like Seattle, they use 1,600 buses as the connective tissue between rail and where people need to get to for that last mile. So in a place like Porterville is never going to have a big city rail system, but it needs mass transit. And over 50% of the rides for mass transit in the U.S. are provided by buses. The thing that's exciting to me about this is if we solve EV for mass transit, we've solved the fossil fuel problem for the majority of the mass transit industry. A lot of rail systems already run on electricity, especially light rail. So it's really the buses we should focus on cleaning up because they can go to any city in the country.
Yeah, and I was going to kind of ask that question. You kind of answered it, which is there anything about Porterville that makes it particularly attractive to electric buses?
Well, for me, I think the most attractive aspect of deploying in Porterville is this is going to be our first deployment in the Southern Central Valley. And I lived for a little while in Visalia, California, just south of Fresno. So I'm well aware of how serious the air quality challenges are in the Central Valley. Of all the places in California where we should be aggressively moving to zero emission, it's the Central Valley, and it's places like Porterville. I think that, probably the most unique aspect and exciting aspect about it is that air quality challenges in the Central Valley, there's a lot of cynicism and hope, in a lot of ways, lack of hope about what we can do. These are some of the worst air quality problems in the United States. If you start deploying vehicles that, rather than being a minor reduction in emissions, they actually completely zero out emissions, you actually can start charting a path towards having much cleaner air in the Central Valley. And Porterville, like Fresno, Visalia, Bakersfield, these of all the cities in California, they desperately need technology like this.
I got just one more question for you, and you've been very generous with your time. What do they sound like?
That's a great question. I'll have to find the spot on our website where I think we have a sound file saved. At low speed, all you really hear is the rolling resistance of the tires on pavement. So maybe they sound like a very large skateboard. You can definitely hear them because these are, big Michelin or Firestone tires. So you can hear that road noise. At high speed, and these vehicles can get up to 65, 70 miles an hour on a highway, what you hear is the RPM of the motor. So the electric motor runs at a higher RPM, and we use an interesting two-speed gearbox that has straight-cut gears. It's a very durable gearbox. The neat thing is that at high speed, it produces a little bit of a hum. So it sounds a little bit like a Star Wars spaceship at high speed because of that very high RPM rotation on the motor. But it's different. The comment I get most frequently from the bus drivers is what they sound like is passengers talking. And so some of the bus drivers have actually complained a little bit that, before, all the noise from the passengers and the conversations were drowned out by the roar of the diesel engine. Now they actually can hear people talking. In some cases, even though the diesel buses are very loud and in some cases uncomfortably loud, the EV buses remove the ability to ignore the passengers.
They might be talking about something you don't necessarily want to hear.
Yeah, that's right. But, from a community perspective, the nice thing is you could sit across from somebody and actually have a conversation with them, which is kind of the way the rail experience works. So we think it'll be a good thing for people to be able to talk on a phone or talk to their neighbor on a vehicle.
All right. That's it for me. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I don't think so. We think this is a, very, very exciting first step. And I think there's big potential for this technology, especially in California's Central Valley.
Well, I really appreciate your time. And thank you. I think your PR rep's still on the line. Tell her thanks for setting this all up.
Yes, I'm still here. So if you have any follow-up questions, just let me know.
Yeah, sure thing. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day.